Hi, I'm David Zimmer. I'm here today with Ananda, and I'm very delighted to be speaking to this language guru of Oroville today. I know that Ananda speaks French. He's a native French speaker. He speaks English, Spanish, Russian, German, and I believe he has a fairly extensive background in Sanskrit and Japanese. Am I leaving anything out?
Maybe yes, maybe no. Well, the point is that in school I studied German as first foreign language, then English, and then Italian. So I had these three languages at high school. And then while doing some university studies, not very serious, but still, I took Swedish and Dutch classes. Then I lived 3 years in Japan. I've been in India for 26 years, exposed to Tamil and Sanskrit and Indian languages a little. And about 2 years ago, I started working in the Spanish Pavilion group. And obviously, I had to learn Spanish to keep up with the group. And about at the same time, I took up Russian almost alone at home.
Maybe you could talk about the difference between formal language instruction versus informal learning and how the process was different for you, better or worse, faster or slower?
Well, actually, to be frank, I was very bad at school. I was so bad that in my first foreign language, German, I ended up at the end of the class. And this lasted for 3 years. And to put an end to that situation, my parents sent me to Germany in a student's exchange. So I was there traveling in Germany with a group of French pupils my age. We must have been around 15 that time. And then I stayed in a German family for 3 weeks, alone in the German family. And this improved my German so much that when I came back after the holiday, within 1 year I was at the top of the class in German. So this set somehow the tone, the direction, what you have to do. If you want to learn the language, you have to do all these things. Go to the country, stay with the people, study there, work there, play there, whatever. But definitely this will always give you a much bigger advantage than just academic studies or studies at home or something like that.
Hi, my name's Allison. I'm American. My family's from Cuba, but I was born and raised in the U.S., I spent some time in Greece. I was working on a farm in exchange for room and board. And the farm owners, they spoke English. One was a British guy and the other was a Greek woman, but she spoke really good English. And so I didn't actually learn any Greek while I was there, even though I was in Greece for 2 months. But they did speak Greek to their dogs. And so the only Greek I can speak is commands used with dogs, like come, sit, stay. So yeah, I can't speak to Greek people, but I can speak to Greek animals. I was traveling on a ferry boat from Greece to Italy because it was the cheapest way to get to Italy. And when I got on the boat, I realized I had no idea what language I was supposed to speak while I was on the boat. I mean, I didn't actually know Greek or Italian, but I could say hello, yes, no, thank you. And I wanted to at least use the basic phrases. At first I was like, okay, maybe I should speak Greek because it's a boat coming from Greece. But maybe I should speak Italian because it's going to Italy. Or maybe I should speak English because everyone speaks English. Or maybe I should speak Spanish because that's sort of like Italian. And so I remember at one point going up to one of the waiters and I wanted to know where a power outlet was to charge my computer. And I spoke like 4 different languages because I didn't know what language that person spoke. I was like, hola, computadora, ne, efkaristo, just mixing all these languages. I probably even spoke French for no reason. And finally I realized, you know what, everyone speaks English, just speak English. It's and get over your like worry that, oh, it's the Americans speak English. It's just, it was, got made it a lot easier to talk to people on the boat, but I was still confused as to like what language to say thank you in. So I'd say it like 3 or 4 different times, mumbling like, gracias, efkaristo, grazie, thank you. Traveling throughout Europe, I expected I'd like get to use more of my Spanish. Like when I went to Italy, I thought, oh, you know, Spanish is similar to Italian, so I'll just speak Spanish. And that just ended up being more confusing than it was just to speak English to people. because a lot of people spoke English, and I'd start trying to say things, and they just switch to English automatically. But I always felt kind of embarrassed, like, I'm the American that everyone needs to speak English to. Like, you know, those Americans, they don't learn any other languages but English. And Spain was really exciting, and I thought, okay, finally, I'm in Spain. I can use Spanish, my second language. And, of course, I was in Catalonia, where they speak Catalan, and so I still didn't know what was being said around me. But at least people were, I could speak Spanish, and they would understand that, too. And I didn't have to speak English all the time, but... My family came over to the U.S. in, like, the early 60s and from Cuba. And my grandparents didn't bother, really, to learn English, at least on my mom's side, they didn't. And my grandmother, to this day, barely speaks any English. Having lived in Miami for 45 years or so, she never needed to. In Miami, so many people speak Spanish that you can get by without ever speaking English. My grandfather was the same way, except later on, my mom and I sort of suspected that he actually secretly did know English, but one day he was in the backyard doing some work on one of the trees, and he cut a branch and it fell into the neighbor's yard, and the neighbor was outside at the time, and he rushes over to the neighbor and says, "Oh, I'm so sorry, I'll clean that right up," all in English. And also his favorite program on TV was Wheel of Fortune, which is this program that is completely centered around the English language. You pick letters and spell phrases, and it never clicked to, like, oh, this is his favorite program, but he doesn't speak English. Like, I wonder why that is. But yeah, so we suspect he was secretly listening to all of our conversations. But it's really easy to live in the U.S. and not speak English sometimes if you find the right pocket of the neighborhood. You know, Chinatown in New York City or Miami if you're Latin American, and especially for the older generations. I mean, the kids that are in school, they end up learning English and having their secret language, and I think that's probably frustrating for the parents that don't know it and having their kids talk in the language they don't understand. But I think the best way to learn English is to immerse yourself in a community that only speaks English or whatever it is the language that you want to learn, because it's really easy to travel to a country where that's the primary language. Like, I could travel to France to learn French, but I could easily find a pocket of Americans and just hang out with them and speak in English all the time and not really learn. But if you're forced to struggle through those sentences, then you probably learn a lot quicker. You could listen to music in other languages. One of my best friends started learning Spanish through Spanish songs. So she'd come up to me and she would say something in Spanish, and I would be like, "Where did you learn that?" And she'd say, "Oh, this song." So that's one way. Not always the best way, because the lyrics aren't always very nice. Sometimes she would walk up to me and say something, and I'd be like, "Oh my God, I can't believe you just said that. Where did you learn that?" But that's another way you can learn another language, through music.
When I landed in Japan, I didn't know any Japanese. I must have looked a few words in a book just before to travel, you know, but this was really nothing. And I ended up on the street having to ask my direction to people, mostly policemen, you know, asking them by just giving the names of the places where I wanted to go, which normally then they would understand. And these people replying to me in Japanese, you know, and probably using all the time the same words, crossing, turn right, turn left, and so on. So finally, I started picking up words like this. So I don't recall having done any formal Japanese studies, but I picked up the language by living in the country. I was there twice for a total of 3 years. So obviously, after some times, you should be able to know a bit of a language.
And have you, when you learn languages now, or when you look at languages, or when you teach foreign languages to others now, what lessons have you learned, or what do you apply in your method of teaching based on your experience and background?
Well, actually, I taught at two famous international schools, or using two famous international methods. The first one was Linguaphone in Tokyo, where I was teaching French, actually not with the Linguaphone method. This was mostly a school for teaching English, and French was secondary. So their method was not very good. So I ended up developing my own method based on my experience on the spot. But then later on, I taught French at Berlitz School in London, and they had a very good method. They had a method which had been actually worked out by the founder, Mr. Berlitz, a long time ago, based on an experience he had with one of his teachers who actually didn't know the language of the students. It was a French teacher. This is a famous story within the Berlitz school. It was a French teacher who ended up teaching French by just talking in French directly to his students, unable to explain them anything in their own mother tongue, which he didn't know. And this was so successful that it attracted the attention of Berlitz, who then developed a method based like this on basically no translation, no real explanation, at least no explanation in the language of the student, using just the language that you are teaching to do all the job. And a very repetitive method, drills of repetition until something is understood and is mastered. While most methods flood you with information and you remember what you've been talking about, but you don't remember the words you used in that particular language.
What methods do you see being applied here, or how are you applying methods? Is that the method you use when you teach people language here, or?
This is the method I try to use, provided the students get along with it, because I found out also, you see, the big danger in a language class is that people tend to forget at one point that they are there to learn a language, and they end up wanting to discuss personal matters, you know, and things like that. It becomes a social thing. So the advantage of the social or emotional discussion is that it has power, because people want to tell something, they want to talk about something. But from a technical point of view, it is very flawed, because that's not really... that's not sufficient to learn the language. So you basically have to force the student to repeat the same thing again and again until this is entered in their head. And their reaction might be, but I already told you that. If you ask them, what did you do yesterday? They might react, but I already told you that. Well, actually, you don't really want to know again what they did yesterday. You just want them to use a specific expression or a specific set of expression again and again. If the students understand that, that's fine. If they don't go along with that, there is a bit of a clash between the intention of the teacher and the student is not able to benefit from that direction.
How about language difficulty? I mean, there's a lot of discussion about which language is more difficult or which language has more words in their vocabulary. Do you think there is such a thing as more difficult languages than others? Do you have any feeling from your experience about how difficult it was to learn one language more than another?
Well, obviously there are language families. So for a French person to learn Spanish or Italian should be much easier than to learn Japanese or Russian. Besides that, if we look at it from a general point of view, it seems that each civilization has the same mental capacity, generally speaking again. It's like a box to be filled up with something. So if they don't fill it up with a specific aspect of grammar or a specific difficulty of vocabulary, they fill it up with something else. So it ends up like there is no real easy language, because if a language is easy on one aspect, then the people had the time and the energy to make it complicated on a different level, just because they had this mental capacity, so they used it in one way or the other. So in the end, when you really want to master a language, one could almost say that they are all equally difficult if you really want to go to the top. Of course, at the beginning, some languages will sound easier in the first stages, but not at the end.
Hi, I'm Victoria. I'm Russian. I'm here in Oravo for about 5 years already. there are many ways to learn different languages, but I found my own way to do it. And for me, the most important thing when you learn a language is that you really want to learn it, and the atmosphere in class and the attitude that you have and that other people in class also have towards the language itself. I had a big passion to learn a few languages. In the beginning when I came, I didn't speak English at all, which actually wasn't really a big deal because I just started to speak it because everyone around me was speaking it, and I liked it also because at that time I felt like I like English. English is good. I want to learn it. So I started reading books, and it was really funny, like doing plays with people and in school and everything. It was cool. And then I found a new passion that was there with me from the time when I was 9 years old. And I was lucky enough to find a Spanish teacher here. What really moved me on to help me learn it really fast was I really liked it. And now it's really funny to observe other people learning it also. For example, I have a friend who is also learning Spanish, and she's in a different group, but still, once she was trying to say that, like, she has an electric motorcycle, instead of that, she said something weird that translated from Spanish meant a secret electrical lover, and everybody was cracking up because it was just so funny, it was unbelievable.
Ananda, can you talk a little bit about what you've learned about language in general from your study of Sanskrit, and perhaps the connections or lack of connection between Sanskrit and some languages or all other languages, and how it has helped to shape the thought process regarding language?
Well, basically, there is a theory that Sanskrit is a kind of mother tongue for at least most of the European languages, and even most probably more than that, though it's sometimes a bit difficult to establish exactly the connection. But I could give you a funny example maybe to approach the problem from a different angle. In India, I was sitting in a train, and I had in front of me, it was one of those sleepers compartment. I had a sign in front of me, tier 1, tier 2, tier 3, because this is a sleeper compartment. And I was just looking at this sign without thinking much. And since I lived in Germany for 5 years, the same word in German, T-I-E-R, means animal. You see, and I was kind of daydreaming and looking at this sign, and some stupid thought came to my mind, what does the word animal have to do in this compartment? And just for fun, I tried to ask myself, would there be a connection between the English word tier, meaning something or horizontal to sleep or whatever, or a layer or something like this, and the German word which means animal? And the answer was no. What could there be as a connection? And then I stopped thinking about it. And a few months later, while going through my Sanskrit dictionary, I found a Sanskrit word which was supposed to be one of the words used to describe animal. And the word was tiranganam. And the explanation of the word is that tir is basically a root which means horizontal, and angam is a body. So animals were described from a scientific point of view as having an horizontal body in opposition to human beings who have vertical bodies. So then I remembered having seen my tear sign in the train, and I thought, that's it, that's the connection. So the root of the word is a tear, meaning something horizontal, which later developed in anything, a sleeping place or a layer in somewhere. And in German, you find it left over in this old Sanskrit name, Tiranganam, which got shortened to Tir, and which remains as the word to describe animals. So this is just an example, but you could do this exercise again and again, and find in so many words, so many roots coming from Sanskrit. So if you master these roots from the Sanskrit, you get into the spirit of all these European languages much more easily.
I've heard some discussion about, as the mother language, Sanskrit, there is a sort of universal vibration that Sanskrit was identifying and then forming into words.
The theory is that, if it is true, is that the people who invented this language, if we can call it like that, we actually don't know how this language came to exist, but established or respected a connection between the sound, the vibration of a particular letter or a particular combination of letters with the objects or the things, the animals, the people or the situation they wanted to describe. I think Sri Aurobindo gives an example in one of his writings that the root used to describe a wolf was actually a root which means to tear, because that's what the wolf was doing with people. So if that is effectively the case, then we can understand that Sanskrit has much more power, because in the choice of words, syllables, letters that it uses, it keeps the vibration connected with the thing, which we have almost totally lost in the modern languages. The words we use nowadays are mostly mental things. We are not bothering about their vibration or their connotation or the sound they produce.
How about some of the neurobiology or the neurological element in terms of learning language?
Well, it seems that to be able to remember words, especially new words, because this is all what learning a language is about, one of the main things seems to be that on a normal level, let's not go into some occult or whatever or special powers, on a normal human functioning, in order to be able to remember a word, the first thing is that you would have to repeat it a few times. It's only after a series of repetition that the word starts to stabilize and remain permanently in your consciousness, in your memory. And what is important is to give a little time in between those repetitions. You can't cram it in a single day by repeating the word 50 times the first day, and then it will be enough. So one of the important things is to give a little time between those repetitions. And it seems, while reading some literature here and there, that sleep is a very important thing. So people who are stressed, who don't get enough sleep, who don't sleep over things, seem to be more forgetful and have more difficulties to learn new things. Also, taking a break sometimes, you know, not too long, and then coming back with a vengeance on the same thing seems to have a very beneficial effect on learning languages.
What is special about languages in Oroville? What is your experience in Oroville regarding language and how it plays a role here? What do you see happening? I know in my experience, in a very short amount of time, I've learned a huge amount of one language, which is Spanish. And for me, I think language is a very special aspect of what's happening. Or maybe it's not language, but it's people coming from all around the world to one place. But maybe you could talk about your experience in that respect a little bit.
Well, this is a city which is dedicated to human unity, understanding other people. So obviously, learning other languages, not all of them, of course, that would be too difficult, but learning one, two, or three other languages other than your mother tongue would be part of this exercise in human unity, because if you don't know the languages of the people, you can still understand them by using a common language, but you don't get the full picture. So obviously there would be a strong motivation here not to go for solely an international language like English and forget all the others, but to put some time, some effort into learning languages. Here we have a collection of people, maybe it's still a limited amount of nationalities and civilizations which are represented here, but there are enough people from enough countries to keep you busy all the time if you want. And basically, to come again to the point I was making before, since our main motivation would not be just to earn money or become successful in life, or we would all be stressed, I think we can have more patience to learn and to teach than in other surroundings that would have other priorities, even if they offer the same possibilities.
You said you've been in Auroville for 26 years. So you must have, and you've been involved in languages learning and teaching for most of that time, I would imagine. Are there some experiences you have which stand out in terms of an individual that you've seen learn a language very quickly or dramatically, or have you seen many different people acquire many languages?
One of my main interesting experience was actually when I was teaching basketball. We were doing a warming up exercise before the class. I was teaching every day except on Sunday in the morning. I had a group of young Tamil girls from the surrounding villages. And we were doing this warm-up exercise, and in the beginning I was just showing what had to be done, turning my head, turning my arm, without saying anything, thinking it was not necessary. They knew that they just had to imitate me. And then at one point I had the idea to tell them in French what I was doing. So I remembered that I had to cut the sentences very clear so that they would know what I was talking about. So I made a kind of system which went about something like, if I translate it in English, it would be head, the head, turn the head, arm, turn the arm, and so on and so on. We did all the main body parts like this. So I did it in French. And then I got the idea of typing it in big letters on sheets of paper and putting it in a folder, in plastic sheets, so that they could read those sentences while I was telling them. We were all standing in a circle. And what I found out is that because we repeated that exercise daily, they picked it up very quickly. So after some times, I didn't need myself to read those sentences. I left it to one of the students to do it. And then they did it in turn. And I don't remember the timings exactly, but I suppose that after 2 months, everybody was totally fed up, knew it by heart, could have recited it without looking at the book, you know. And I got stressed because I thought, what do we do next? So I translated it in another language. I don't remember right now. And then in that other language, we repeated the same story, the same dynamic for another, whatever, few weeks or something like this. And then again, this was over. So we came back to French a little to refresh our knowledge. But then again, what to do next? So finally, over a period of 2 or 3 years, I ended up translating that thing in 6 or 7 languages, you know? And at one point, you could say that those kids could read or recite that warm-up in 6 or 7 different languages because of the repetition. You see, every day the same thing. And the pity is that we don't know how to use this repetition. A teacher will enter the classroom for 20 years and say every morning, good morning, good morning, never switch to another language. This is actually time wasted. Once something is known, drop it, go into another language, introduce new expressions, new way of talking, come back from time to time to refresh what had been learned, but move forward, don't waste your time.
Do you think language has a personality? And if so, maybe you could give some examples of the personality that you feel in different languages?
Certainly, languages are the reflections of the personality of the people of that particular civilization. Now, it's difficult to talk about, also because if we made a wrong evaluation of something, some people might not take it nicely. But it is also true that within each language, the people coming from that particular country or civilization will also talk it in different ways. They will then put their own character. So even if a language is relatively hard, you would find people who use it in a very soft manner and the other way around. So for that, maybe we will keep it open and we will say that in the end it's a personal matter and you are the one who puts the last touches of consciousness in that language and can make it almost whatever you want it to become.
Do you have a favorite language?
Not really.
I'll try one more time. Could you say there is a language that for you, you like better for certain things, or another language that you like better for other things, perhaps? One for poetry, maybe, I don't know, maybe one for as a working language or...
Well, obviously, it is true that if suddenly I was imposed a restriction, let's say I was in jail and I was told you can have only one book to study one language of your choice, I might have to come back to Sanskrit, because being the mother language of so many languages, and actually I'm still trying to find out of which languages Sanskrit has been the mother, you know. There are some languages, it's very difficult to establish a connection. For instance, the relation between Chinese and Sanskrit I have no idea what's the relation, you know. But with other languages, it's already more obvious. With some, it's still a question. So definitely, if there were a situation like that, I think I would have to go back to Sanskrit because... obviously, it's unavoidable to not to concentrate on the mother of all the other languages.
Or I make the assumption that through acquiring more languages, you're deepening your thought ability or your understanding of the world or deepening your knowledge, not only by acquiring different ways to say the same thing, but by acquiring different perspectives or different attitudes to define our world more clearly, perhaps. I mean, that's a theory because I don't know so many languages, but through acquiring so many languages, have you found that you deepen your understanding of the world? And if so, how has that played a role?
See, the big question, I would say, my answer maybe will surprise you, but fundamentally, we've been through a period of assessing spirituality for a very long time as withdrawing from the world. You know, basically for so long, we saw the meditating yogi on the Himalaya lost in not doing anything, not thinking anything as the ultimate reality. Now, of course, if we look at it like that, then the whole world disappears and who cares about civilizations and differences and this and that. And I think it has taken all of us a very long time to come back from that vision of realization in life. And then now that we are faced with basically incarnating a divine life on Earth, we are faced with the question, what is this divine life going to be made of? And then suddenly, are all these various civilizations, their strengths, their good points, are they going in one way or the other be part of that, each one bringing a specific value to the common pot? And if yes, then of course, you want to have the most possible, the greatest amount of them, if you want to manifest that. In that case, you want to know everything. You want to know all the languages, understand everybody, because suddenly you're not withdrawing from the world anymore, but you're trying to bring all good things within brackets into manifestation.
What do you think about translations? I mean, have you found that through acquiring this knowledge of other languages, you must have had experiences where you've read something in a translation and then had the opportunity to actually experience it in the native language itself? Have you noticed a big difference there? I mean, do you think translations are effective, or did you find a huge difference when you could actually interpret a message but in its native language?
Well, obviously, I think it is generally accepted that translations are halfway in between, you know, and it's a choice between not understanding anything or having at least the possibility to understand it through a translation. So if you stop there, I think you have only half of the bottle. So if you can move forward and then learn the language and skip the translation, then you have the full bottle. So in the end, yes, it can be a help on the way, but definitely it's not the real thing.
Do you think there is something inherent about English as a language itself which makes it a good medium or a good language to use as an international language? Or is it just simply a coincidence that the most powerful country in the world is a native English-speaking country, and so it has dominated linguistically around the world to be the business language or the language of international relationships?
From the grammatical point of view, it is true that English can be regarded as one of the most easy language in the early stages, which may be the reason why people tend to use it, because they don't have to think about how to conjugate, how to declinate, and things don't have a gender, you know, masculine, feminine anymore. So that becomes very easy. On the other hand, people may find the pronunciation very difficult, reading it very difficult, because in some cases they don't know how words should be pronounced. And we should also take into consideration that English as an international language is not the English that is spoken in the United Kingdom or in Great Britain and in America. It's to a certain extent an entirely new language. It is just called English because nobody has found another name for it. Actually, it is taught in some universities, it seems, and it is called offshore English in England, which is one of these humorous remarks by the British people. It would be much clearer, I think, to just label it international English and acknowledge that it has lost most of the aspects of pronunciation found either in the British Isles or in the United States, because people throughout the world find it difficult to pronounce it the original way and have developed a kind of flat international pronunciation, the one I'm using right now, if you have noticed, which make it easy to understand for almost everybody. But in that sense, it's almost a new language.
Was it difficult for you to learn English or to teach English to others?
No, actually, it was very easy, I would say. I'm surprised always when I hear French people say that they have trouble learning English. I was strongly motivated to learn English as a youth because I was a huge fan of the Beatles, and I absolutely wanted to sing their songs, understand what it meant. So that was my first motivation to learn it. Then later on, I became a huge fan of Charlie Brown's and the Peanuts and spent hours reading those comics. And the third leg of my motivation was buying a book of Sri Aurobindo in English on himself with short passages, you know. And even if it was a bit difficult in the beginning, the book was relatively easy to read because it's short paragraphs. And then reading that and all the other books by or about Sri Aurobindo, definitely in all the three cases, I was just carried. And since, as we said, English is widely spoken, then you end up talking in English all the time. And after 26 years in India, where you use English as a working language, you know, in administration, accounting, and things like that, it just happened like that.
Do you often read in different languages at the same time? Or maybe you could, for example, tell us some of the books you're reading now, if you're reading one book in German and one book in English, one book in French, or something like that.
Well, that's true. I think at last count I had read about books or novels in 8 languages. Because you see, there are languages which are difficult to read. I can speak a bit of Japanese, but I can't read a book in Japanese. It would require more efforts. And I read an English newspaper every day. I read an English magazine once a week. Someone gives me a Dutch kind of weekly newspaper, which I read also. Otherwise, I usually avoid reading books in French or English, because except if I need to read them for any specific reason, I would kind of consider it a waste of my time. So I try to read books in other languages to learn languages or to refresh my knowledge. And every time I feel I'm losing in one particular language, I try to catch up by reading a book, a novel, or something like that.
Is there anything else you could say about Sri Aurobindo or the mother's attitude or ideas about language, or perhaps the mother's, if the mother had any idea of what language should be spoken in Auroville or how language should be approached in Auroville?
I think she has given us some basic task of teaching 4 languages in Auroville. Unluckily, I don't remember the order in which she has given them. So you correct me if the order is wrong or if someone hears about a different order. I think basically English as an international language. French for very specific reason, I think, of mental clarity, and maybe also to give a particular touch to this community. Tamil, because this is the local language, and Sanskrit, which Sri Aurobindo and the mother viewed as a possible national language for India. So these were the 4 languages that she wanted to be taught in Auroville. It seems also that somewhere she had written that the administrative correspondence in Auroville, inside of Auroville, should be done in French, which actually is not happening, and that English should only be used in connection with the outside for administrative matters. Most probably, we will never know exactly what were all the profound reasons behind such a recommendation. And again, it might, for certain reasons, be politically sensitive. So we can't say much about it. But definitely, anyway, we could say that learning these 4 languages is a good thing for everybody. It's a pity that it's not much easier for those who already speak them, of course.
So maybe you could just leave us with one phrase or one word in a few different languages.
So in German, it would be maybe in a simple way, tschüss. In Russian, it would be paka paka. In Spanish, it would be ciao, nos vemos. And in Japanese, it would be very polite. I could say thank you. Domo arigato gozaimashita.